Welcome guys, my name is Mick Donaghy and thank you for joining me on another episode of The Recruitment Show. On this episode I have a very special guest. He is our first interview and he's someone who I reached out to 8 months ago. He is my coach, my mentor, someone who is changing the business landscape of Northern Ireland. He is challenging the status quo, challenging the mindsets, and he's helping a shitload of people along the way. So he was the perfect guest for my first interview, and we go into a lot of detail with regards to his journey. His name is the impenetrable Gavin Wall, and he is basically helped me a lot over the last 8 months. So he is our first interview. I hope you guys enjoy it. Just a bit of a heads up. This interview was over a Skype call. It was slap bang right in the middle of the day, so you can hear a lot of the insects and cicadas and stuff around my house. The sound quality is a little bit off. It's, however, there's a lot of information that Gavin enlightens us on, and I really hope you enjoy the journey and story of how Gavin's went from A to, he's not even at Z yet, he's probably at J. So thank you for joining me on another episode. I hope you get some insight from this. I would love to hear your feedback and just give me a shout out if you're listening. Cheers. Thank you guys and welcome to another episode of The Recruitment Show. This is episode 6. Today we are joined by a very special guest, a former barrister turned entrepreneur. He is Northern Ireland's Digital Person of the Year for 2018, a highly successful business person across multiple different industries from retail through to technology, speed mentor to many, including myself, and he's the man who famously got Northern Ireland dancing and singing at the Greatest Showman event in into last year. So he is Gavin Wall. Gavin, how's it going?
Yeah, great, Nick. Great to be with you this evening. This is our usual wee spot, so it is. But we're just roll reversed a little bit tonight.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
You're asking me.
I'm interviewing you for a change.
Yeah, no, all good. Looking forward to it.
So,
by the way, I've just been listening to your podcast. Let me give a shout out to your podcast. I've just been listening to the first two episodes and really fantastic, really enjoying it. And I just want to point out a couple of a massive thing that I'm sure your listeners are actually getting, and it's that you love recruitment. You absolutely love it. There's so much negativity about your industry, both from the people inside it even and the people outside it. That's just really refreshing to hear a voice about somebody who's passionate about what they're doing, wants to add value, and then who's also flying a flag for Ireland as well. So, look, fair play to you, boy.
No, absolutely. Thanks, Gavin. Obviously, you've helped keep me accountable through the last eight or 9 months. So, I really do appreciate it. So, we're just going to go in with this sort of longer format podcast that I haven't done so far, but I just wanted to get into your psyche and into your routines and how you've become who you are today. And I know it's been a huge journey. And something I know that you've touched on quite a bit is, you know, your story, which is quite well documented. Like I touched in on in the intro, you went from a barrister to an entrepreneur. And the first question that I wanted to ask you is, what do you think actually makes an entrepreneur? And how do you go from, you know, normal Joe Blogs to actually being one?
Right. I actually did a post about this recently enough about whether you're born an entrepreneur or whether you can acquire the skills. And there are differences. Now, for me, it's a wee bit easier. My mum, when I was 6 years of age, she said she could have sent me out to work at 6 years of age. I was very independent, very young. And I've always had a very entrepreneurial streak. At the age of 15, I was building patios in my own parents' home. Earned £170 on top of the cost of the buying the flagstones and mixing cement and things like that. So I was always a wheeler dealer, always doing stuff. Was buying shares when I was a kid. for Christmas present. I was getting Christmas presents. I had one Christmas. I got a sewing machine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, a sewing machine. Now, back in those days, that was 30, 40 years ago. Well, 30 odd years ago. You know, only girls would have been thought of would have had sewing machines, but I used that and did a wee cottage industry. We were all mods back in those days, so we're getting our trousers turned into drain pipes, and I was charging people for amending their clothes. Then I got hair clippers. I used to cut everybody's hair in the area and used to charge them money for that. So I was always had that in me. And the one thing that took it out of me was that my family were in law. So my dad was a lawyer, my younger brother did law, and the brother behind that did law, I did law. So I had a real struggle in my own personal life between law, what the family was in, and the entrepreneurial stuff. And ultimately the law stuff initially won. And I sort of followed that journey for a number of years until I ultimately managed to escape 10 years ago.
And so
go on the entrepreneurial side.
When you mentioned that the law side won, was that because of more because of sort of peer pressure, family pressure, or was that because, you know, that was something that you felt more instinctively that you had to do?
No, it was not peer. I wasn't forced to do it, but the expectation was there. I was the eldest child, so the expectation we had a good solicitor's practice here in Belfast. And the expectation, you know what, I think it was a lazy attitude or lazy decision by me. If I went into my dad's firm and I took over my dad's firm, that was me effectively set for life. And I probably didn't have to put that much effort into it other than actually qualifying as a solicitor, which I wasn't too bad at. And I took that, that sort of shortcut, didn't challenge myself enough. Said, you know what, I'll go for the easy money. And I sort of took that approach. Now, I tell you what actually happened after me taking that maybe slightly easier approach. 2 weeks before I qualified as a solicitor, my dad came home drunk. And he said to me, he called me and he said, son, I'm taking early retirement. You'll be paddling your own canoe. So after having spent 5 years doing something that really wasn't my passion, but was a shortcut to money, I was left as an unemployed solicitor.
Okay.
And that's when I started weighing up whether I should be in law or should be in business or what the hell I should be doing.
And so what was the sort of catalyst for you then to say, right, I'm going to go all in here? You know, what was that fire in your belly that made you say, right, I'm going to give up everything that I've studied and all that, all those years of investment to go into something that essentially was an unknown?
Right, so I'll try and condense this all pretty quickly. So after my dad, I became an unemployed solicitor, and for about 3 years, I just blew my head off partying, drinking. The pain was actually that severe. I couldn't get a job for 6 months because people thought I was going to go to my dad's firm after I got further training with them, because he hadn't announced he was retiring. But I partied and partied my head off. And at 27, I made a decision to change my life. And I decided I was going to live every day, not like it was my last, but like my last ounce of energy to make myself better, to move forward. And but I did that in law. So, but at 27, I made the decision. I was a solicitor. I was working in the civil service here. And at 27, I set up my first sort of business as a side hustle. So I set up an international phone card business as on top of my solicitor's job. And I also then started trading in property. So I had my solicitor's job and then I had two businesses on the side, the side hustles. Those businesses were started with a small amount of money. And within 2 years, I turned that into a six-figure sum. There's a whole story behind that. And then ultimately, I used that money that I had to go back to being to give up my solicitor's job. I went back to Queen's University. I trained as a barrister then, so I still had the bloody law thing. But in my head, what I was saying to myself was, I need to be as successful as my dad. So I had a negative burning desire that was driving me to be as successful, because I felt such bitterness towards my dad. Because I felt he'd let me down. I processed that and I've got over it. So I then switched to being a barrister. And I did that for about 7 or 8 years. And I became really successful. I made plenty of money. And then one day, just totally out of the blue, one day I realised that I had had as much success as he had had in law.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that day happened, my desire to be in law just literally vanished.
That's quite interesting, because I was reading that book, the Atomic Habits book, and you recommended it to me. But they mentioned in the first couple of chapters about goals, and once you actually reach a particular goal, that you can become sort of demotivated, and that's kind of what you're sort of mentioning. Once you had reached that particular stratosphere, then you wanted to move on to something else.
Yes, it was a goal. I tell you, I can remember that goal so powerful. I remember the day I got married. I was at my wedding, and my dad's sister and nephews and nieces, because my dad did well in life, they all looked up at my dad. My dad was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and my dad is a great guy and all the rest of it. I remember telling them, they asked me, how come you give up solicitors to be a barrister? And I said, at my wedding, I said to them, because I want to be more successful than my dad. I'm not going to stop until I am. I swear to God, silence. Jesus, you are a dick. You know, it was really embarrassing. I never. Yeah. But the burning desire, it was like a furnace inside me because of what I felt he'd done to me. Now, ultimately, what I realised is that he was probably protecting me. He was probably hating his job.
Yeah.
It hadn't worked out. He didn't like his partners, maybe, and he was saving me from that. Mm-hmm. But that goal, that desire drove me. It was unbelievable. And the second I felt I'd achieved it, it just went like that overnight. And then I was able to think about, right, what business am I going to do? I'm now going to follow my own journey, my entrepreneurial journey that I really wanted to do myself.
So you must have had a lot of guts at that point. You know, if you've had a lot of success and it was coming easy for you to give that up and to go into something like a phone card business or something completely different from that, you know, how did you get into that sort of psyche and that mindset where you felt strong enough to leave something that you were so successful at?
Yeah, do you know what? You see, my desire, this is going to sound, now this is real entrepreneurial stuff here, and I'm going to sound like a total and utter dick, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I was earning hundreds of thousands of pounds a year as a barrister. I had, at that stage, I had 50 properties with loads of equity, so I was wealthy. So maybe you might say, well, maybe I had less the risk because I had all the property and all of that stuff as well.
Yeah.
But I just didn't, you see, the thought of just doing the same thing for 30 years, I'd largely conquered it. Again, I'm going to sound like a bit, I'm fooling myself, but to do the same thing that I'd largely conquered for the next 30 years just actually wasn't appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted a new challenge. I had always said for that 21 years, at that stage it was 11 years, I'd made the decision at 27 that I was always going to keep pushing myself to get outside my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I've done that religiously for 11 years. I've progressed through the phone cards and through all of the stuff that I've done and through the property ban and gone from a solicitor to a barrister. And I just needed a new challenge.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, it was difficult for my wife to accept,
mm-hmm.
For me to say to her, look, that lovely lifestyle we've got at the minute, you know, I want to put that all in jeopardy and give that all up. Where I could just keep dialing it in for the next 30 years and making plenty of money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not prepared to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do something.
So how old were you then when you decided that you wanted to go on your own entrepreneurial journey?
So I was 37.
So for most people, that would be sort of slap bang right in the middle of the high risk period for most, you know, with families and mortgages and all the rest of it that comes with having a family. You know, was there any specific challenges around that, you know, starting from something from scratch?
Well, I didn't even know what it was going to be. So I knew I wanted to do business. I didn't know what it was going to be. And what actually happened, it was by pure accident. So I mentioned that I own quite a lot of properties, and we had myself and another guy owned, it was a wee property play, we had a filling station, a petrol filling station, I'm sure you have them in Australia or New Zealand as well,
mm-hmm.
and as it was on a bit of development land nearby. It was a wee rundown, tiny building. It was the smallest convenience store in Northern Ireland, 468 square feet, and it had a wee petrol pumps attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we bought that, and we rented it to a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we rented it out to a guy, had never intended to trade it, had never intended that, just as a property play. And what happened was he sold illegal fuel from the filling station.
Mm-hmm.
So he had imported it from the south of Ireland, laundered fuel, he sold that in the filling station. And I got a phone call one day to say customs and excise are actually on the filling, on the forecourt, taking the pumps out of the filling station.
Mm-hmm.
You better get up here quick, Gavin. So I went up there. So I was still a barrister. I went up there and customs were taking the pumps out.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, what's going on here? I said, well, he sold illegal fuel. We're putting them out. And cut a long story short, after a bit of negotiation with them, they agreed to put the pumps back in because I said I would go in and start trading there the next day.
Okay.
Myself. That's how the actual entrepreneurial journey started. It was pure chance. So the paperwork that they were using, what happened was the paperwork they were using
mm-hmm.
to take the pumps out,
mm-hmm.
I had beaten a case on that exact, those exact charges earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, he'd be back in here within 48 hours. How would you know? I said, because I beat that case like that just down in Omer earlier. Oh, it was you.
Right,
yeah, it was me. I was a barrister who defended the guy. They're shouting over to their boss, oh, flip, we're in trouble here. This isn't good.
Yeah.
And then I said, look, what is it you really want here? And they said, look, we really want him out. He's trading in four other stations. We think he's doing exactly the same thing. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, put the pumps back in, take them off the low loader, put them back in, and I'll be in here trading tomorrow. And they said, but you're a barrister.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, not anymore. I'm a retailer now. And that's actually what happened. And then my wife was pregnant with our first child, and I had to go home and tell her that our new baby had just been born, and it wasn't the one she was expecting. It was the Wall Group.
Oh, God.
That's actually how that started, just over 10 years ago, 10 years and 3 months ago.
So what, unpacking that just a little bit. So
you
found yourself in a specific situation, and you basically leveraged that situation and took a risk and put the cards in.
Mm-hmm.
What was so special about that specific little retail joint or the petrol station? What made you go, I'm going for it? Was it just something that you went, oh, I've been thinking about this for a long time and the situation has presented itself, or was it something else?
Yeah, it was just total fate. In my head, I can just remember being on the forecourt, and as soon as I saw them taking the pumps out,
mm-hmm.
I started saying, this was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
This little thing started, this wee voice started going in my head. This has all been sent as just a pure serendipitous opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just meant to happen. And I started thinking, I remember thinking, I know nothing about this, but, you know, how hard can it be? A little did I know how hard it, if I knew what I know now,
yeah,
I probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, I was thinking, it's always a way, isn't it?
Jesus, how difficult can it be? Is this wee shop here? And how do we look in the shop? And I could see that he wasn't doing a good job. And I could see it was November time, and he had wafer, you know, wafers that you would put ice cream in the middle of.
Yeah.
He had those, a display of those on the front bay. And I was thinking, who the hell would be buying those in the middle of November? Because what had actually been happening was he didn't want people to use the shop because he was selling so much fuel.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted them to come in, buy their fuel and get away because he had been selling laundered fuel and was making a big markup on it.
No,
so I remember just thinking, I could do more. I could do more with this. I could do more.
So as soon as you've bought the petrol station now, you've went home to your pregnant wife and confronted that particular situation.
Yeah.
What was the next thought from there?
She said, what the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
This is flipping crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She actually was an accountant, so she knew a bit about this industry. And she was going, Gavin, this is just absolute madness.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth are you doing? You know nothing about retail. You know nothing about managing staff. So I was a barrister. I had no staff even.
Mm-hmm.
I was just responsible for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So starting from the next day, basically I had to learn how to manage staff, what to do with them, what procedures you needed to bring in. And, you know, it was a really, really steep learning curve.
And that's probably moving on to the next question. How did you go from being, you know, Gavin Wall, the small retailer, to where you are today, where, you know, you're quite synonymous within business, within high performance, within Northern Ireland? So how did you go from point A to point B or point Z?
Yes. So basically what I do, no matter what I'm doing, is I try to find, so if you take the customs and excise as an example, and then I always, no matter who I'm dealing with, I want to find out what they deem to be success. So whether it be you in this interview, you know, I want to make sure I'm giving you value. Whether it be customs and excise, I said, what is it you want out of this? And their desire was to topple him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, right, okay, if I put him out, that's your big step towards toppling them. So mm-hmm. that was success to them. So when I took that tiny spar, it was a tiny store. It wasn't actually a spar. Do you have spar in New Zealand?
No, but spar obviously, brand. Me being from Belfast, I know what
7-11.
It is.
7-Eleven.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like a... Yeah,
for
yeah.
your listeners, whatever, 7-Eleven, maybe in America or whatever. Or so it was a convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
They owned the spar brand.
Mm-hmm.
This store was so small, they weren't keen on putting spar on it. Mm-hmm. I went to meet them. And I said, look, tell me what success would look like for you. Tell me what success would look like for you. The shop was doing £14,000 a week at the time. They said, well, if you got that to £20,000, it would be a miracle, mm-hmm. right? And that's what we would need it to be needed for long-term sustainability of the spar brand above the door. Mm-hmm. So I asked them what success looked like. Mm-hmm. So I already know what they think is an amazing achievement. Yeah. Then it's my job to set about absolutely smashing that. So within 18 months, we had turned that store into 28,000 a week, 28,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that 20 was near impossible.
Okay. So for you months, then... go ahead.
Yeah, within 12 months, because I've delivered such success, I mean, they literally thought I could walk on water at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
Then another big store came on up the road, came on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't have the money at the time. I started to develop because of the property crash. My own circumstance started to get significantly more difficult. My property portfolio started to crumble. But there was another shop further up the road that came on the market, a big, big shop. And of course, who were they going to speak to? They were going to speak to the guy who turned 14 into a £28,000 a week store.
Mm-hmm.
And they backed me with a seven-figure sum on that next store.
Mm-hmm. So I said to them,
what looks like success for you? And they gave me a figure, and I went after it. Yeah.
And so just from that then, you obviously had got one store, and then the opportunity of a second store came up. Was that purely because you had spoke to them about what they wanted to achieve, what their vision of success was? So then you knew exactly how to go about reaching that target, you put the systems and processes in place to reach that target?
100%. And you know, the fascinating thing about success is success breeds more success. So if you show that you can create success, I tell you, your business partners want you to do more of it.
Mm.
They want to double down with you. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same across every single industry. It doesn't matter what industry you're in, the same principles apply. Deliver the success, establish what success looks like,
mm-hmm.
put the systems in place,
mm-hmm.
get your team coalesced around your goals, let them know what it is you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
If they are on board with that, or you can sell them a vision of what the benefit to them is,
mm-hmm.
You can actually then achieve your goals and then go on to a second job, and a third job, and a fourth job.
So during those early days when the Wall Group wasn't a big brand, yeah. when you weren't yeah. a big brand, how did you go yes. about attracting staff?
That was probably the most difficult thing, because the areas that I'm trading in, there's a lot of social disadvantage and economic disadvantage as well. And it's all part of the Troubles. I don't know if some of your listeners will know what that was all about. So we struggled to find the talent that I really needed. That was hard to find. A lot of kids leaving school at 16 years of age without the experience and the knowledge. And North Belfast, in fact, you're from North Belfast, so you will know this really well. Mm-hmm. It's quite a divided area. You know, I was having to put up with a lot of riots during the summer and all sorts of different disadvantages. So to be fair, a lot of it was really me leading the battle, me leading the charge at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really critical point. The piece that changed that for me was social media.
Mm-hmm.
Was social media. The thing that changed that for me was social media. My ability to attract talent, higher quality talent than I could otherwise get on the ground was social media. So I started a few years back, I started telling the story of the Wall Group. So I started doing my posts on my LinkedIn. People were saying to me, why are you posting on LinkedIn a few years back? What, you've got nothing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if you're going to sell any more cornflakes by posting on LinkedIn. But I was just actually posting my narrative, cataloguing my journey, sharing the learnings that I had made in my industry, talking about what success looked like, talking about what failure looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing that stuff. When I started cataloguing my journey, my mindset, it was quite amazing how many people started to reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And say, Gavin, we actually love what you're talking about there. We like your mindset. We see that you've got a purpose for your business to make a difference to North Belfast. Mm-hmm. And people start saying, and we would like to come and work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like people of real quality.
Mm-hmm. So just unpacking that a little bit as well. During that time, have you ever used recruiters to find staff?
Yes, once.
How did that go?
Once. So, yeah, look, what actually happened was, what happened, I was for an accountant,
mm-hmm.
right? And what happened was I generated some of my own candidates,
mm-hmm.
and I also asked a recruiter. And to be fair, the best person for the job was with the recruiter, unfortunately for me.
Yeah.
So I went with the one with the recruiter who's funny. I was speaking to him earlier on today, so mm-hmm. it was an accountant. He's with me today. He's been with me for a while. So that was the one time I used a recruiter. But I mean, I've given speeches. It's not about having to go at recruiters. So I have given speeches in Belfast. I do get a bit of trolling actually from recruiters in Belfast, because I say that we get the recruiters we deserve.
Mm.
People think that means I'm to have to go at recruiters. But I think as businesses, we need to showcase ourselves. We need to stop using recruiters as procurement tools. So, you know, whenever there's a gap, just phone the recruiter up. Recruiter will send us in a couple of candidates or send us somebody down they recommend, and then we'll put them in the slot. So mm-hmm. let's do it differently. Let's build a narrative about what we're trying to achieve. Let's engage our teams, and let's use recruiters whenever we've got a niche sort of a shortage that we have, rather than just say, look, we just phone recruiters at the drop of a hat. Let's actually do more to retain and engage our own people and actually showcase what our purpose is within our business.
And I think that goes both ways as well for recruiters too. You know, if a recruitment consultant is working for a company who has a great brand, who has a really good retention of staff, who treat their people really well, then it's a far easier job for that particular consultant to place the right person. You know, you don't want to really work for businesses where there is a revolving door and people just coming in and coming out. And I suppose one other thing as well is I find interesting is, how did you go around building that brand that actually potential candidates become interested in? You mentioned social media.
Yeah.
You know, how did you leverage social media to attract staff?
I didn't know I was doing that. This is the beauty. I now know the power of it. Haven't done it. I now know the power of it, and you have to be careful that you don't abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea that I was doing it. The biggest gift, I think, on social media isn't even necessarily your sales. It's actually what you can do to attract people to your business, i.e. better quality staff, mm-hmm. And the best quality staff in the industry. So all I was doing was saying, look, hashtag, I used a hashtag, which was hashtag back in North Belfast. Mm-hmm. People would be aware that North Belfast was a disadvantaged area and had some issues. So I turned every negative in North Belfast into a positive. So we were doing a lot of cross-community work, posted about that, hashtag back in North Belfast. We created the first non-contentious parade that North Belfast has ever seen, where we were doing cross-community, and marching hundreds of people through North Belfast in colour parades, collecting money for charities. We did all that with a hashtag back in North Belfast. Whenever we would get robbed, which happens, you know, in North and in other places, we wouldn't put a post up about those bastards and stealing off us, fucking scumbags, you know, that type of thing. We put a post up saying, do you know what, we've had a hard day today, we've been robbed, and it's about rebuilding the team, supporting the people in the store who are actually on the front line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's go and do some team bonding to try and help us get through this, mm-hmm. using a bit of black humour to get over for the shock, you know, yeah. all of those things. So everything we were trying to, you know, turn all the negatives into positives. Mm-hmm. And just, I didn't know this was going to be a consequence of that. All of a sudden, the door started knocking with people who were working for bigger companies, mm-hmm. who were getting paid potentially more money than we could actually offer. Mm-hmm. But they were saying, you know what, we just want to be part of something, mm-hmm. rather than just a number in a bigger business.
So do you feel like you have a responsibility to the community within North Belfast now, because you have sort of taken that role of that sort of leader, someone who's consistently trying to turn negatives into positives?
Yes, look, there's that. Now, there'd be, like, this is with anything. So I am, you know, one of the major business owners in North Belfast, and there'd be some who might think, he's just in it for the money, or he's just in it for the business. But I take that really, really seriously. I take my kind of post there the other day about cross-community, and a few people had a wee go at me. And I just look, I responded and said, these are the types of things we're doing. We're doing a Fresh Little Hands cross-community thing between the Shankill and Ardoyne at the minute, mm-hmm. where I'm putting money in to try and develop some new opportunities for young people. And, you know, I take that. The communities, you know, if you're in business and you're working in communities, you know, I think you get back what you put in. If you don't give a damn about what goes on in those communities and you're just in it to, you know, sell some product, mm-hmm. I just don't think you'll have the same level of buy-in from either your teams, because your staff, the large proportion of them will work and will live in those communities in any event. Mm-hmm. So I think the more you put in, the more you get back.
Mm. And that's something like what Gary Vee talks about. You know, it's the sort of jab, right hook. It's, you know, give, then potentially sell. You know, it's give and you'll get, yeah. you'll receive in some respect.
Look, that's in life. It doesn't matter what you do. Just add more than the other person can reasonably expect to receive. Look, and sometimes you don't... The one other thing, sometimes you don't get it back from the people necessarily that you're giving it to. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then we'll thank you in other ways that aren't necessarily, sometimes you think, oh, I've given a whole lot to that person or that community, and do you know what, I'm not feeling the love today, mm-hmm. but somebody else might have seen you do that and come in from the side and give a wee surprise, and you know, and give you a pat on the back or thank you or give you some other opportunity, because they, or say, Jesus, we see what you're doing in that community, why don't you come over to our community, we've got a wee opportunity, or we've got a shop over here, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, we'd like a wee bit of that secret sauce over here, yeah, you know, yeah. that sort of thing.
So obviously I grew up in North Belfast, and I know the sort of yeah. psyche, and I know the people, yeah. and I'm 100% yeah. a proud man to come from North Belfast. But sometimes back home, when someone's quite successful, there can be a lot of, you know, as you mentioned, black humor, a bit of slagging, a bit of, you know, a bit of essentially hating on someone. You know, I always use the sort of vision, if someone has a nice car in Belfast, they get a bit of jip about it, but if they had a nice car in Auckland,
yeah.
they'd be getting sort of a high five for it, do you know. So how do you go around and deal with that sort of negativity that you might receive, that sort of hate? How do you deal with that?
Well, I learned that very quickly. So when I started trading in North Belfast, I had a lovely Audi convertible at that stage. And within a few months, every single panel on that had been smashed with hammers.
Jesus, that's terrible.
So my Audi was written off.
What were you thinking?
it was every window smashed, every panel wrecked, and totally written off. Parked outside one of the shops. I'll not say which of the shops it was. And what I realised then was, right, you have to keep this lower key. This has to be kept lower key, because, you know, sometimes I'm dealing with difficult issues. You know, a lot of the stores I've gone into have been problem stores where the previous owners haven't managed to control, you know, what's going on either with staff or outside of the shop. And I've gone into those and tried to bring, you know, a level of respect for everybody, you know, a level of systems, and try to, you know, even actually bring procedures into shops. Some of those shops in some of those areas wouldn't have ever had proper disciplinary procedures applied. Mm-hmm. And even doing that rather than the law of the jungle has been a big culture shock in those stores. So I learned pretty early on. So I drive Wee Fiat 500 now. And, you know, that's the way I'll keep it.
So there must have been a change in your mindset as well, though, going from an Audi convertible to a Fiat 500. You know, what was that mindset shift? And how did you go from the sort of glam to the sort of hiding away in the background and being low-key?
Yeah, no, I just realised it had to be done. Look, for that particular thing, you have to sacrifice and change. Well, the other thing that happened as well anyway was I was losing all the property anyway. That's another, that was separate to this business. And I was going through a realignment. So, look, I used to have lots of fancy cars. I used to drive Porsche 911s and all sorts of stuff when I was barrister. And I was actually realising that whilst I had been blessed to have that sort of stuff in my life, that was a stage in my life that I was moving on from, actually, and I was sort of paring it back down a wee bit to reflect my current circumstances at the time, and also to reflect the fact that it just wasn't feasible to drive anything. You know, being the owner of multiple shops across a tight geographical areas, you just had to keep it lower key, and that was just part of the gig. You know, that was just part of the gig.
And with regards to sort of the negativity that you might receive, say, from the online communities, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, to be fair, I get just largely massive support, you know, from North Belfast. The trolls that I have. Look, I'm trying to be a leader. So let's take it on I'm trying to inspire. So part of what I do, we maybe haven't mentioned this part, well, I've mentioned the speed mentoring and obviously you've mentored yourself. So I'm trying to inspire other people to greatness. I'm trying to inspire people to be the best version of themselves that they possibly can be. And that wee mindset sometimes that you can have in Belfast or elsewhere might be, you know, who the fuck does he think he is? He needs to get back in his box. You know, people can think that about me, and they can think that about some of the people I'm mentoring, because the people I'm mentoring are going to start going home to their partners or to their friends, and they're going to start talking differently. You know, they're going to start saying, I have new goals, I have new aspirations. This guy, Gavin Wall, the speed mentor, he now tells me I can actually achieve stuff that I didn't think was achievable before. And those people, whenever they go back in and start doing, having those different conversations, I know what happens. What normally happens is, wise up. Who do you think you are? Catch yourself on. And people, not necessarily because they're nasty, but because they're maybe of being left behind, or maybe that the person will achieve it and will be more successful than them. So I sort of openly, I readily open myself up to trolls. I'm prepared to take the heat. And sometimes I'll push a post I'll push a post maybe right to the edge of what you can say. So I'm aware of that at times. So, you know, really gonna go. Well, there was one that set them off recently. It was New Year's Day, and I don't drink alcohol, so on New Year's Day, because I wasn't drinking on New Year's Eve, I did a post and said, look, I've already got a day ahead of the competition, mm-hmm. because I wasn't out last night, I don't have a hangover, and I've got a little done, and I'm really buzzing. And I knew, like, pushing that to the edge, that there might be people who would kick back on that, because they don't like the fact that they were up with a hangover. Now, if you're going to have one night a year where you have a drink, like, let it be New Year's Eve or your birthday or, you know, some celebration. But there would be people who would have hangovers that day would be going, fucking bastard. Look at him. Rubbing it in. Who does he think he is? He thinks he's a day ahead and all this.
Yeah.
And there was the trolls just unleashed themselves on me. But I sort of half knew that beforehand. But mm-hmm. what I want to show to people is that those trolls or those people who have nothing but hate in them, they're never going to stop me.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because I've got purpose. I know what my goals are. I've got my goal card. Here's my goal card here in my wallet with my goals on it and with what I'm grateful for, mm-hmm. you know, my gratitude. And I'm still going to be striving on to do that no matter what people say. So mm-hmm. I'd like, in a way, to be seen to be having those my mentees. Mm-hmm. And you see when you get that wee nick or somebody's just chipping away or trying to kick you at the knees. If Gavin can take 1,000 trolls and still be up there the next morning blattering away, chasing after, because I've had one negative comment, I'm not going to let that stop me.
Absolutely. I know I was, I remember seeing that post and I remember thinking, Gavin's got his finger on the pulse again here.
No. You're thinking about that wee one when I said when you were drinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. No, but yeah. I always find it funny drinking on New Year's Eve because I've never been a fan of New Year's Eve. And drinking and then you wake up with a hangover and it's the first day of the new year. And I always, you know, probably over the last 3 or 4 years, I've probably only drank once on New Year's Eve, you know. So I always do find it's a little bit of a peculiar event. But With regards to those sort of negative comments and stuff that you get, you know, if there's someone out there on their entrepreneurial journey and is receiving a lot of them, do you have a specific, you know, process that you go through? Do you just ignore them? Do you reply back to them? Do you just laugh at them? What's your typical process?
Look, it depends. You really need to firstly, some people will feel that a critique or criticism or a different viewpoint, some people just lob everything in together as, I'm just getting trolled. But very often, look, it might be just somebody with a different viewpoint. So there's different types, you know. There's the ones, I get a lot of ones who screenshot my LinkedIn stuff and put it on Twitter, and then they'll say that they're not going to stop kicking me in the head until their foot breaks and call me a cockwomble and all this sort of stuff. And those are trolls. Now, I would say there's probably no point in getting involved with them, but I even wind them up a wee bit, depending on what my mood is. You know, so I would get involved a wee bit. But if there's somebody just has a different point of view, engage them. See if you can actually show, in a really polite, just always go back with positivity. I know this is really difficult because you might feel like just lashing back or having a snarky. Sometimes their comment mightn't be the way that you perceive it. Like, I've seen that before. I felt like saying something back and then I've gone back with a comment, mm-hmm. only to realise that I picked them up at the wrong end.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't. There's not a one cap fits all. I mean, for instance, as a barrister there, I had a barrister who was really snarking up 6 months, and I tried to persuade him and put positivity into him for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And at the end of 6 months, I really hadn't moved and get a discussion going. And oftentimes, you can actually win them round. They can be some of your best advocates going forward.
Just on a bit of a sort of side note, something a little bit different. with sort of creating that mindset, you know, bracing yourself every day for the journey, as you call it, the entrepreneurial journey, which is obviously a roller coaster, dealing with multiple different people, you know, positives, negatives, all that sort of thing. Do you have any sort of specific routines that you go through, you know, like an evening routine or, a morning routine that you would sort of go through in order to sort of prepare yourself for the day ahead?
Yeah, like particularly my morning routine would be particularly I have about, like you want to take the day on, you want to make the most of every single day. That is the advantage that you have, is to make good use of your time. So the first thing I do every single morning is the very first thing before I get out of bed, before I do anything at all, is drink 1 liter of water. Mm-hmm. So I drink a minimum 4 liters of water a day. I bring a liter of water. And I know we're actually, I know this is a podcast, but I can just show you there's mine already set up for the morning.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually sitting up here on the bed now at the minute.
Yeah.
So that's my liter of water there, just waiting for me. That will be down the minute I wake up. And that just gives me a mental cue. And I just say to myself, that's me one up on the competition already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a liter of water. Then sometimes that's enough to get me straight into my really positive routine. If it's not, I'll do some of my, the next thing I actually do is I get my goal card out and have a wee read it. Now, my current goals are for the 8th of May on my goal card. I've got what I call a gorilla goal card,
mm-hmm.
which is just a massive goal. My goal here is for the 8th of May, 2020, which is actually my 50th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got my goal down for that. And have a wee read of that, then I read what I'm grateful for,
mm-hmm.
and then like to go downstairs, and I have a squirrel comes into my garden every single day at the same time.
Oh yeah,
it's just a wee gratitude thing. Funny, I'm just doing a podcast about it at the minute myself.
Yeah,
and the wee squirrel comes in, and I'm just grateful that I've got a garden, and I've got a lovely place in Belfast. And the squirrel comes in, does his wee thing, runs down the same track, and that just makes me think, you know what, how lucky am I?
Yeah,
right. And I build a routine like that. If it's still not working for me, I'm not still not set to take the day on.
Mm-hmm.
I then go into a number of other things, one of which is The Greatest Showman, currently, with soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I did an event around The Greatest Showman, and I use that to get me pumped up for the day ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Then I break into doing some social media stuff. So I've got a wee routine, and I just follow that routine every day to get me in the right frame of mind to take on the day.
So you obviously mentioned about gratification, which I see a lot of successful entrepreneurs talk about, you know, from Tim Ferriss. Gratification. Do you embed any sort of exercise into your daily routine and your morning routine or anything like that? Or do you take any specific food, or obviously you mentioned water, which is extremely important. Is there anything else that you sort of try and embed in?
The food, So my dad, I've really worked hard on getting my dad right over the last number of years. So I've cut out things like cereal because there's too much sugar, etc. in them. So really what I'm all about is normally a banana and cashew nuts. That's absolutely, for my, I like to keep pitchiness out of my life. So mm-hmm. I really control how much caffeine goes in. I have my cups of black tea at the same time each day.
Mm-hmm.
So I control, and my life isn't too pitchy. So I just have a good level of consistent energy right throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
I find banana and cashew nuts is absolutely brilliant for that in the morning. If I really want to get a consistent banana and cashew nuts, cut out cereals, stuff like that, it has far too much sugar, because about 11 o'clock in the morning, you then start to dive your sugar level comes off.
So
do you
take much coffee or anything else?
I've never tasted coffee.
Oh, really?
I've never tasted coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, never tasted coffee in my life, no.
All right, well, there's no point in starting now then.
no, I'm definitely on the start. No, but I know, for instance, my mentor would be Rob Moore. Rob Moore, he takes coffee, so he takes his first at 5:45 in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, goes to Costa Coffee, gets it, I think it's double espresso or something like that. He gets in and he takes another one just after just after lunch, I think, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a pattern that keeps him right during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think with trial and error, everybody will be different.
Mm-hmm.
But with trial and error, you can get a good balance to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, if you're wanting to have success as an entrepreneur or in recruitment or whatever, or doing podcasts and whatever you want to do, you see if your time's not productive. Honestly, you haven't a chance because there's plenty of other people out there that are trying to get it right.
Yeah.
So testing yourself about your energy levels and what makes you tick and when's the best time to do your important work and when's the time to just do your crappy paperwork that you don't like doing, mm-hmm. etc. Is really important.
Do you do any meditation or anything like that?
So I need a slap on the wrist at the minute, so I do. So I've had some really, really good productivity. Got myself in really good space last year. I was working really well on the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I got some brilliant insights on how to connect a wee bit better with my son through meditation. Really, if I'm honest, the last 3 or 4 months, the workload has just been so extreme.
Mm-hmm.
That my meditation has really dropped away,
mm-hmm.
and I really need to get back to that. So meditation can work really well, but I've taken on too much work, so I'm out of that. I would like to get back to that, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, that's it. There's so many things. It's like an avalanche, really, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Everything comes at once, and it's just trying to embed it all in. At the moment, I'm trying to sort of get into a strong daily routine, and that's why I'm sort of interested in finding out how you do things.
Yep.
There sort of seems to be a level of consistency there for all sort of successful entrepreneurs that, you know, many will do some exercise. You know, most of them talk about actually drinking water in the morning, meditation. There's always seems to be a little bit of a pattern involved. And just on that, what about your evening routine? Do you have any sort of...
I've got really strong, I've got so much stronger on that now. So I can tell you, I'll not bore on for too long, but I was a really poor sleeper. So for the last 20 plus years, I was a really poor sleeper. I would have done about 4.5 hours a night on average. And I almost wore it like a badge of honour. Like I was a wee bit macho about it, if I'm honest. I can do that. And I did it for 20 years. Started with really heavy partying. Then when I was a barrister, you used to work late every single night into the wee hours, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, getting ready for cases the next day. So I had a really bad culture of between 4 and 5 hours kept a night, sleep a night. In the last 18 months, I have worked really, really hard to overcome that. And part of that is my evening routine.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't take any black tea, no caffeine after 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
My hydration routine, 4 litres of water a day, has really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't work after 9 o'clock at night anymore, apart from a Monday every other week, mm-hmm. when I speak to a certain McDonaghy from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
But other than that, my cutoff is 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So because if I work later than that, my brain stays active.
Mm.
So what I'm aiming to do every night is to give myself an hour of just chill time, mm-hmm. and whether that's just chilling, watching the TV, or chilling, chatting to my wife, or chilling, reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
I build that hour, bring down all the neurons in the brain, just to calm them down. And the other thing I built into my routine, because I was never a big sleeper, and this is absolutely brilliant one, is I never need an alarm clock. I've never needed an alarm clock in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've done is I've started using an alarm clock to help me sleep at night. So my alarm, I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'll vary that depending on whether I've gone to bed a wee bit earlier or later or what I've got on. So it'll be anytime between 6 a.m. and 6:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But I set my alarm every single time. And what I found is by setting the alarm and allying that to the water and to the wee hour I have every night and to not working late,
mm-hmm.
that has given me, I'm now up to over 6 hours per night sleep. And if you told me 2 years ago I'd be sleeping 6 hours and a bit per night, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have believed you.
Mm.
And also my diet around sugar. So probably for 10, 11 months of the year, I have virtually no sugar in my diet.
Mm-hmm.
And just eat lunch or breakfast, lunch and dinner. And that has really helped me. So no snacking at nights or anything like that.
And do you feel more energetic and more productive because of that?
100%. Oh, the difference. I know. So let's say Christmas. So Christmas, I let myself go for 9 days. So for 9 days over Christmas. And it was a conscious decision. By the way, Chimp Paradox, what helped me a lot around this was Chimp Paradox, Professor Steve Peters' mm-hmm. book. It's unbelievable, Controlling Your Chimp. I let myself go for 9 days over Christmas. And once I let myself, I had a bit of chocolate and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the difference in the morning time compared to when I know I'm clean eating all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell the difference of having maybe a bar and a half of chocolate at night. It's unbelievable. I actually feel that in my gut.
Yeah.
The next morning compared to not having it and the rest of the year.
In your mind
so
as
God
well.
Knows what people, yeah, yeah, just absolutely the big, big difference. So God, I see people who are smoking and drinking and eating a lot of rubbish. There's just virtually no possibility unless you're the exception that proves the rule, like an Alex Ferguson or something like that, who could drink heavily and still be amazingly sharp.
Mm.
You know, I just don't know how you can keep up with somebody who's sort of high performing.
Absolutely. And you'd mentioned about the chimp paradox. Just moving on to our final sort of few questions. What are you consuming at the moment in terms of books, podcasts, that sort of thing?
So I'm doing I've almost finished it, Atomic Habits.
Yep.
So I'm doing that one at the minute. So I'm doing that in audiobook. I'm reading, this is the first time I've read any of her stuff as well, called Brené Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a book, Brené Brown, on leadership, called Dare to Lead.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually gifted to me by a friend of mine who I highly respect. And I'm always reading, I'm always dabbling into about two or three things. I'm doing a wee bit of Gary Vee at the minute on the podcast as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's my current wee sort of hit at the minute, a wee bit of Gary Vee. So probably the three at the minute are Atomic Habits, Brené Brown, Dare to Lead, and then a bit of Gary Vee actually on the podcast.
And do you have a book, a song, a movie, a podcast that you consume or you read, listen to when you're sort of struggling for motivation or inspiration?
Yeah, that's just The Greatest Showman. The Greatest Showman is the thing I go to. It's my go-to. And basically, it's a story of an entrepreneurial career. It's a story of life. It's a beautiful musical. And if I'm struggling a wee bit, just put that on. And off I go.
And you're back in the zone again?
Yeah, you could not be. There's something wrong with you if you could not be, if you listen to that.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, that sort of concludes sort of the questions that I had, Gavin. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your evening once every 2 weeks to chat to me and be my mentor. And just on a bit of a side note, you know, I've got so much value from, you know, working with you over the last sort of, I don't know how long it was, 7 or 8 months now. And it's the accountability piece, but also that sort of the ability to generate ideas together and you know, come and go off every 2 weeks and actually go about setting goals and smashing them. And I definitely feel like I've stepped up maybe 40% since, you know, working together, 40, 50%, definitely for sure. And I'm definitely on the right track. So I do appreciate everything you've done.
Well, interestingly, every mentee is different, Mick. So there's some mentees that I literally have to bring a stick with me.
Mm-hmm.
I literally have to bring a stick with me almost to threaten them, to try and get them to do the stuff that mm-hmm. we're agreeing should be done between the couple of weeks that we go.
Yep.
You know, with yourself, if I'm just gonna get a bit of feedback to your listeners, with yourself, I'm flipping having to challenge myself because I know if we have agreed something during a session, Mick is off and he's delivering it. He's probably going to come up with three or four things yeah. in between as well. And then yeah. I'm having to try and get ahead of you just to keep up with you. So, no, you're an absolute pleasure to work with as a mentee. And we've actually created some unbelievable stuff, I think, down there in New Zealand and in the recruitment space, and, you know, inspiring you to push on with the podcast and everything. And I've been listening to it myself, and I'm sure your listeners are getting some great value from that. So, no, fantastic to work with you.
Thank you, Gavin, and I appreciate you being my first guest. And just for anyone who is maybe listening, who actually hasn't been introduced to yourself before, what work can they find you on your social?
Yeah, so they can find me on my LinkedIn. So I'm GavanWall. So Gavin Wall. Also Instagram. I've been starting to head up Instagram quite a bit. I don't know if you've seen Nick on my stories and
love
stuff.
It.
I know we've been talking about this between the two of ourselves. So actually, I'm finding that surprisingly easy to make content for as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've got GavinWall.com, my website, and find me in any of those, and then I'll have the Speed Mentor podcast coming out soon that I've just been working on recording. So find me there. Hit me up. Send me a message. Anybody talks to me, every single comment gets replied to, and I love engaging with people.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it, Gavin. Thanks for being my guest on the 6th episode of The Recruitment Show. Thank you.
No problem, Mick.
Oh, and just before you go, I'd like to leave you with one of my favorite quotes of all time from the inspirational Martin Luther King Jr. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The Recruitment Show. If you're on social, please follow me at LinkedIn at Mick Donaghy and on Instagram, Mick_Donaghy. Catch you next time on another episode of The Recruitment Show.